everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy Ray Allen on the other side of the glass. Ray is engineering and producing our show. And together, what do? We welcome everyone to the program here in the final couple of days of January. It's the 30th of January, 2017. Hope you had a great weekend. The weather improving very much so. As we push into the 70s, you cannot beat that for this time of year, as we kind of, I think Groundhog's Day traditionally signals the mid-year point in winter, not necessarily here. I often say that here in Tucson, Bruce Ash and Don Jorgensen, we get autumn. We're the last place in North America to get autumn. Some of the leaves turn over along the Rito and Fort Lowell Park in December, and we're the first place to get spring in February. So we don't have much of a winter, right?
Well, if we had autumn, I missed that day.
Yeah, you missed it. Well, you didn't see the leaves turning there over in Fort Lowell Park, I guess, the one day before they all blew off. Anyway, it is the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI. Our live line number, 790-2040. If you'd like to join in the conversation on our Monday political face-off, you are more than welcome to call in and give us your opinion. It seems like everyone in the world has an opinion right now. If there are some people that don't have an opinion on what's going on nationally, I have not run into those individuals yet. Anyway, it is the Monday political face-off. We bring together each week a different team of commentators. This week it's Bruce Ash, fourth term now of the Republican National Committeeman for Arizona, and Dr. Don Jorgensen is the former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Gentlemen, did you have a nice weekend? Bruce, you first.
It was delightful.
What'd you do?
Well, we had our first Shabbat dinner with our son and daughter-in-law and our new baby grandson, Bodhi Paul, and the first of many hundreds, if not thousands, yet to come.
And it went well. The food was good.
Yeah, the baby had mom's milk and we enjoyed big honk and ribeye steaks. It was pretty good for everybody.
All right. How about you, Don? What were you doing?
Oh, I had a little dental emergency, so I've been eating soft food, so I'm a little jealous of that.
You had to call a dentist on the weekend?
Oh, right before the weekend. So
whoa.
But we had a great time, some dear friends celebrating some important birthdays, so we had a nice get together with their family and and then attended a tighter-than-expected basketball game yesterday.
Yeah, and the Cats move up to number 5 nationally. The Monday Political Face-Off is presented by my friend Mo Gall, and his family have been running Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing, the operation, since 1985. They do such a great job. I have all of my framing done there. Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at mosgallery.com. They're also on Facebook. Mo believes in very spirited political dialogue, and that's what we try to present to you each Monday here on The Face-Off. So as I was mentioning, Don and Bruce, very few people seem to not have an opinion on the performance of the first 10 days, roughly, of President Trump. The people that voted for him most likely are standing and applauding, thinking he's doing a terrific job. And then Don, the other folks that didn't vote for him, I think maybe appalled. Is that too strong a word, do you think, for the first 10 days?
Certainly had shock.
Watching
as well.
In horror?
Well, perhaps.
Am I overdoing it here?
Well, I don't think you're overdoing a lot of the reactions, but my first question would be, why is anyone surprised? He is doing exactly what he said he would do. I think the surprise is that he's doing it often in violation of the Constitution and with little regard for the law or the consequences of these actions.
And Bruce, you think he is doing a terrific job. I've been following your Facebook posts.
The president, like Don said, made promises during his campaign, and he is one of the very few politicians in this country who was governing as he campaigned. The things that he said he would do, he's doing. And I'm not sure exactly what Don was referring to as unconstitutional. I'm sure that he has some sort of precedent for that. But this president will nominate a Supreme Court justice tomorrow that will be an originalist, a constructionalist. And I said to Republican supporters for some period of time that maybe the most important thing about the next 4 years, U.S. presidency, was going to be the Supreme Court. Filling the Scalia post is a big deal, and there may be another 1 to 2 Supreme Court nominations during the next 4 years. And, you know, Barack Obama had two his first term and later as well. Bill Clinton had his. I hope that Democrats will cooperate the same way that Republicans did when Presidents Clinton and Obama had their nominations before the U.S. Senate.
And Don, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but when Bruce is referring to some say we're actually in a constitutional crisis right now over these the executive order that was signed restricting immigration into the United States from 7 Muslim majority countries for the next 90 days.
Yeah, there's two issues here. We'll come back to the Supreme Court appointment issue, but with regard to this, the immediate result, as you saw, was that a court had to get involved and issue a stay because of the questions around the legality of the order, let alone the recklessness of it. As was made quite clear, the president and whoever his advisors are in the White House that wrote it and pushed it did no vetting of it. Now, vetting isn't asking for permission. It's checking with seasoned, experienced folks, State Department, Justice Department, Customs, to identify what are the possible consequences here and what is the path going forward to enforce it, if that's obviously what the president chose to do. None of that happened. I think the least we should expect from a president is kind of a thoughtful approach and not the kind of reckless approach that has the consequences it has had in separating families, in detaining folks who had a legal right to be here, and creating potential difficulties, and this takes it out even farther, to our troops overseas. Think about the folks who were detained and now are told they can't come to the U.S.
You're talking about the interpreter who had worked with
U.S.
troops in Iraq?
These Iraqi interpreters who worked for years beside our soldiers, helping to save lives, helping to protect them, helping them to function effectively. In return, there was promises made that they would be able to come to the U.S. to reestablish themselves. And these are folks who are under threats from ISIL, from the opponents. And now, essentially, that rug has been pulled out from under them. And so what have we done to our soldiers who are there now? What kind of additional risk have we put them in now that those interpreters who they may be working with understand that President Trump broke the promise the U.S. had made to them?
Well, let's just look at the recklessness of the decision. First of all, the president, his primary responsibility is to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States of America from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And you're saying
what
the Muslims
what you fail to talk about, Don, and others, is that Syria, Yemen, the Sudan, Somalia, Iraq, Iran, and Libya are dangerous places where there are lots and lots of people who mean this country and most of the West ill. Now, there was about three, according to government sources, approximately 325,000 people from abroad came to this country over the weekend. 109 of them have found themselves in a limbo situation. What President Trump did was not unlike what President Obama did in 2011 with a reset and a reexamination of vetting. This is not directed at Muslims, although it is Muslims in these various countries largely who are responsible for terrorist activity both in their countries as well as in various countries in the West.
Well, you have one of Trump's closest advisors, Rudy Giuliani, who said, in fact, it was targeted against Muslims. He said on several shows this weekend that President Trump called him and said, I'm ready to enact the ban on Muslims. How do we do that? And this is what has happened. There have been zero terrorist actions committed by folks coming from those countries to the U.S. in the past many years, not from any refugees. There's no evidence of that. The selection of states are arbitrary in terms of anything they're trying to attack. And we know where the list came from. It came from a list that Obama put together, which had nothing to do with refugees coming over or suspected terrorists. It had to do with British or European citizens going to those countries before they came to the U.S. The vetting that was in place was already essentially a two-year process. We're talking about these Iraqi interpreters, for example. A two-year process. That's pretty extreme in identifying who is safe to come into the country or not. This is no more than essentially targeting a particular religion and done in a very haphazard way. It doesn't target numerous other countries where terrorism is an equal threat to what you're describing, but it does clearly single out one religion, because part of the order also said that minority religions from those countries would be allowed to enter the U.S.
Well, there was another 36 predominantly Muslim countries that weren't involved in this particular reset. Perhaps there may be others as well in the next days or weeks. But at the end of the day, there is still 320 plus thousand people that came to this country over the weekend. 109 of them find themselves involved in some sort of detainment for a brief period of time. And that hardly is the horror that was inflicted by groups in various airports and so on. And the judge, let's face it, who made the ruling, is an Obama pick from 2015 and is very sympathetic in this particular area. The president has discretion in these areas. This is well-known precedent, and I think much of the hoopla will be over here shortly.
All right, we're going to take a break right there, and we will be back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off, 790-2040. When we come back, we'll go to the live line, but right now it's time to take our first break. Be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with six airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Experience the best of the Canadian Rocky Mountains with the rail journey on Rocky Mountaineer. You'll travel alongside the powerful Kicking Horse River and pass by monumental landmarks from the early days of the National Railway. On this legendary route, you'll see postcard images around each bend, including stays in picturesque Lake Louise, with scenic tours of Jasper National Park, and much more. Contact Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Rocky Mountaineer rail journey today. Bon Voyage Travel, your travel experts.
Welcome back. 12:20 in the afternoon on the Buckmaster Show, the Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, conveniently located Fort Lowell and Dodge. They're on moesgallery.com and on Facebook. Let's go now to our live line. It is our face-off with Don Jorgensen and Bruce Ash, and our friend Jim is with us. Jim Kelly would like to contribute to the show. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bill. Don, Bruce, I have respect for both of you. I do want to ask one thing. I really want you guys to use the language of the order and use the word suspension as opposed to ban.
I didn't use the word ban.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Bruce, but please use the word suspension because it's important later down the road for legal purposes. Secondly, this suspension, by the way, has sunset clauses based on the performance of the reports that State Department DHS needs to put in according to the order. So that still has to occur. Thirdly, do I wish that it had been more clear that previous Visa card holders and green card holders were exempt from this suspension? Absolutely. The execution by the bureaucracy of ICE and CBP kind of screwed this up at the airports. Now, we've been fighting for 5 years to get those interpreters, more than 5 years, to get those interpreters that we promised that we would bring to the United States to meet that promise. And we need to meet that promise. If we need to re-vet green card holders, we can do that over a process of time that does not need to be included in this executive order. So I just really want everybody to be a lot more precise in their language and use the language of the order itself.
Okay, Jim, and before you go, just to clarify, Mr. Trump himself has used the word ban in a tweet.
That's correct.
As you know, yeah, Jim.
Yes, I do. And unfortunately, that is Mr. Trump's peccadillo, but a tweet is not law.
Of course.
The executive order is written differently.
Of course.
So, Jim, I apologize for quoting the president directly.
But a tweet's not law, Don. You know that as well as I do.
Right.
thank you, Jim, for the clarification there. Let's go to Joel. Hey, Joel, how are you? Hey, Joel.
I'm good. Hi, how are you?
You're on the air.
You know, I want to say, first of all, it's good that you have both sides represented, and it's good to hear what different sides have to say. But, you know, just listening to this, and again, this is something that just is so fresh. It happened recently over the weekend. But what I think happens a lot, and I'm seeing it even on today's show, is that we come into these discussions with such a cemented viewpoint, such a already predetermined disposition to view whatever is going on from that viewpoint, to where you're more eager to state your interpretation and not really listen to the other guy or to refute the other guy, instead of trying to find a way saying, well, maybe what he was trying to do was good, but he just didn't do it in the right way. Or, you know, maybe you have a point that we shouldn't be overreacting. I mean, nobody's willing to concede even a little bit to find some common ground to discuss ways that this could be, you know, rather than, hey, he's a jerk, or no, he's great. You know, can't we find a way that we could all discuss something that might have benefits from both sides? Hey, maybe you're right that it's not fair to a lot of people that they should have this, but also maybe somebody else is right that we need to have this, but we could have done it in a better way.
Okay, Joel, I'm glad you had your right to make your opinion known.
You know, Joel, this is Bruce. I have noticed over the weekend there was a lot of what I would refer to as enhanced interrogation of Republican office holders and Republican spokesmen regarding this particular policy. In fact, a non-government spokesman, a non-politician, a guy who is going for his fifth Super Bowl ring this weekend, according to several different sports news sources, is going to be grilled over his supposed loyalty to Donald Trump. All we should be talking about, you know, if you're talking about Tom Brady, is deflated footballs and not Donald Trump. They found a damn Make America Great cap in his locker one day, and all of a sudden he's been saddled ever since with being a Trump supporter. But all kidding aside, and I noticed this being in D.C. during Inauguration Week. There is an awful lot of not just tempers and emotions, but there is a concentrated effort from the left to, and it's been there from the very beginning. I was a victim of it with over 75,000 emails telling me not to vote in the Electoral College for Donald Trump. This is an organized effort. It has started almost within days after the election to delegitimize the Trump presidency. The Democrats have vowed to squelch any Supreme Court nominee. Leftist groups practically chased my wife and myself and friends off the street, injuring us on the Friday of the inauguration.
You were injured?
No, we weren't injured, but it would have been very easy for us to be injured.
Okay.
And a police line had to come and move protesters out of these areas. You know, we were a bunch of old people walking around in tuxedos, you know, trying to get to a party that night, for crying out loud.
Oh, boy.
And you know, we need to bring the rhetoric down.
I agree with Joel that
it needs to come down. And you know, the next day in Washington, D.C., it was kind of interesting. The RNC, all of our members were at the Omni Shoreham Hotel. We were there. We took every room in the hotel for 4 days or 5 days. The next day, guess who all of the guests were, except for a couple of those RNC holdouts? Well, it was women's marchers, okay? And you know, the majority of those women who marched were just as quiet and just as peaceful and just as focused on the issues that they're interested in as some of the kooks and the weirdos and the, you know, the freak show things that was the only thing we saw in the news.
Well, let me offer the same response from the other side, because as folks listening know, Bruce and I often agree on different issues, actually, and certainly we both want safety and security of the country to be paramount. In these kind of situations, two responses. Number one, I happened to be in Alexandria the day before the election. A lot of folks were out there, and I was, frankly, harassed by a group of young Republicans. Now, I don't turn around and say all Republicans are like that, but
that's
minorities.
That's the exception to the rule.
They are, on both sides, and I think we can deplore any kind of violence or harassment toward others in this situation. With regard to what's happening at the top with President Trump and the administration, you have an individual who campaigned on divisiveness, who is now not just campaigning, but governing by identifying those who oppose his beliefs and positions as enemies. You know, we haven't heard this since the 60s and Richard Nixon. You know, the press pointing out facts or pointing out misstatements and such are not the enemy. They're representing the people. John McCain is not an enemy, and yet he was described that way by President Trump just over the weekend. That kind of rhetoric adds to the uproar and the continued divisiveness. You know, we've asked time and time again for a president to seek to unite the country. Democrats, unlike Republicans in the Senate, have said if President Trump comes up with reasonable plans and such, they will look at it, they will work with him if it's in the interest of the nation, something that Republicans like Majority Leader Mitch McConnell vowed to not do throughout the 8 years of the Obama presidency and opposed every step. Talking about asking the Democrats to do what they did in supporting Supreme Court nominees under Obama or Clinton is fine. Let's have the Republicans work with the Democrats. They're the ones who opposed the nominee throughout most of the past year that Obama put forth. And so it's a bit disingenuous for the Republicans to be the party of no for 8 years and all of a sudden turn around and ask the Democrats to act on behalf of the country and not their own political ideology like the Republicans did. Fortunately, I expect the Democrats will do that.
Bruce, final thought. I've only got about 10 seconds.
Well, let's hope so, because we have a great need in this country for tempers to settle down. There were many people in this country who felt a change was needed. That change is here. And on those things that we can agree, let's agree. And on those things that we disagree, let's try to get a favorable outcome from them.
And that's why we do this face-off. We try to hear both sides and maybe find some common ground. And remarkably, every show, there are a couple of items, believe it or not, where we do find common ground. And that's what keeps us going. All right, Don Jorgensen, thank you for coming in, Don. And Bruce Ash, thank you very much.
A pleasure.
All right, it's exactly 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show. Kimberly Yee is a state senator who is the Senate Majority Leader, and we will talk to her from the Capitol. That's next. The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and Hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Tuesday at noon, we'll talk with the new chair of the Republican Party of Pima County. Also, Craig Sumberg of the Fox Tucson Theater joins us, Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice, AM 1030 KVOI. We've got worldwide live listening, our podcasts, 6 years worth of programs in the archive, all at buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're broadcasting from AM 1030 KVOI, known as Tucson's Voice. We have live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. It means you can hear the program anywhere in the world if you're by a computer. 3384 East River Road, Green Things. Saw Jan and Jack, the owners, over the weekend. They have done just such a beautiful job with their 13 acres just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. I learned over the weekend from Jan and Jack that now is the time to trim the roses. You would think that, well, because it might still get kind of cool at night, this would not be a good time. But roses apparently want to be trimmed the end of January and early February. Check out greenthingsaz.com. Let's go now on the live line up to the Arizona State Capitol, and let's speak with the Arizona Senate Majority Leader, Senator Kimberly Yee, Republican from District Number 20. Senator Yee, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing real well. I see that you released the majority program for Arizona Senate Republicans. Give us a few of the important points in that program that you hope to deal with during this session.
Yes, we were excited to unveil our 2017 majority program. After meeting individually with our Republican caucus members, we came up with this wonderful program to show what will be our roadmap for this next legislative session. At the top of our list is economic development and job growth. This was really a priority among many of our members in the bills that they will be sponsoring, and ensuring that we have the best possible environment for our new and existing businesses in Arizona, and ensuring that we have the types of bills that will maintain a good tax program that is creating the job creators for our businesses. This is something that they felt was very important so that we can establish a strong economic development portfolio.
So you're putting definitely economic development. We've been having some success here in Southern Arizona. I think there's kind of a spirit of excitement right now in Southern Arizona, a Caterpillar for one, bringing in a huge operation here. People obviously care very much about economic growth, and they also care about education. It's, again, a very front burner issue, isn't it, at the legislature?
And education was also at the top of our list of priorities. I believe personally that these issues go together. If we have a strong economic development plan and we continue to see our jobs grow, then we will have the revenues come in to successfully build that education system so that we can allocate the proper funds for a strong education system. So we had all of our members really wanted to make sure that these two issues were at the top of our list, in addition to maintaining a structurally balanced budget.
What can you say at this point about the budget? I know there's kind of a couple of interpretations of where we are right now in the fiscal arena. What's your take on it right now?
We are really looking at our budget carefully, because we certainly don't have enough funds for all of the programs who are asking for line items. And that is always a challenge every year we go through the budget. We had, interestingly, a new development in Proposition 206, which was the minimum wage increase that passed in Arizona during the general election. That has interestingly put a new fiscal development on our budget, because the state contracts with providers to provide for the developmentally disabled population and other providers. And so those workers will also have to have their wages increased by this new initiative that passed in 206. That will immediately put at least in the 20 millions of dollars a new allocation to our budget because of that new law. So that obviously will have less on all of these other programs that are really well needed.
We have had in recent weeks here on the show, we've had the Speaker of the Arizona House, we've had the Senate President, now we have you, who obviously in a leadership position. Even Senator Farley, who's been on the show, has talked about there seems to be a new spirit of cooperation between the Republicans and Democrats this time around. Have you seen that?
I think it is a new day, and that's a good thing. We certainly want to work across the aisle, and we do know that in Arizona, and particularly in my home district of District 20, we have a large base of independents in this state, and they want to see that working relationship between Republicans and Democrats. And so I think it is a good thing to move forward with. And yes, it is already a start that I have seen in this legislative session.
We're hearing about HERF funds and perhaps some sweeps, and that is not good news to those of us here in Southern Arizona, because we feel that we get the short end here when it comes to money from the state for roads. What can you say about that?
Well, in our Republican majority program, we have down, I told you the top three, we had economic development, structurally balanced budget, strong education system. Well, number four is about transportation, infrastructure, and technology. And one of the first points we wanted to note in that category was that we need to recognize a well-designed, well-maintained network of roads and freeways to be able to create an atmosphere for economic success, including those local funds that we call HERF. So we have seen member by member come in to my office saying we cannot sweep those HERF funds again. And I think that has been made loud and clear from our perspective here in the Senate side. And I think that will continue as we continue to develop the budget. So that's a good thing for Tucson and Southern Arizona.
What is your understanding, Senator Yee, on how much money is available in what is commonly referred to as Arizona's rainy day fund? And should that money stay where it is in that fund?
Yes, the rainy day fund stands for the Budget Stabilization Fund. And it is the set-aside that we put in the budget each time to make sure we have something that is there in case of an emergency. Right now, we are looking at approximately $460 million in our rainy day fund. And it's interesting because even a 1% drop in estimated base revenues would result in the loss of almost $100 million in revenues for this fund. Mm. So even a couple percentage point loss in revenues over a couple of years really eliminates the balance of our rainy day fund. So it is a significant fund that we keep in place just in case. And we do that even in our personal lives, right? We have sort of that stash away for that rainy day. Well, this is the same thing, only it's $460 million. Sometimes people come in and say, well, we don't need that. We can use that for, you know, this or that. Well, I think fiscal budgeting really requires us to set that money aside. And again, we really should tap into it only in the case of emergencies.
So what is the timetable right now, Senator, for the budget? What are you hearing? Here we're getting ready to wrap up January already.
Right. And we, again, for your listeners, we really try to work on a 100-day calendar for our legislative session because we're a part-time legislature. And so it really does require quick discussions right off the bat. We heard the governor's State of the State speech on January 9th. And so here we are at the end of the month, and we are in the Senate going to be starting our small group meetings, which means we meet with our smaller groups. We can't meet as a, you know, as a whole because of, you know, meeting requirements. So we meet in small groups to discuss what our priorities are in that budget going forward. And really, starting these conversations now is a good thing because we really need to get a perspective of where each member is and how those dollars should be prioritized. We obviously need to work with our counterparts over in the House of Representatives. They have 60 members. We have 30 members. So it takes time to work these budget items through in these small group process. What is important, though, is that we get this done in a collaborative manner, and the Senate and the House are meeting regularly in leadership to discuss how we move forward, and I think that is something that hasn't been done in the past that we are doing this year.
All right. Senator Yee, thank you very much for spending a little bit of your lunch hour with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
Kimberly Yee, the Senate Majority Leader on the Buckmaster Show. I'm really excited about this Saturday and the Bon Voyage Travel Showcase 2017 that I will be a part of. The event is free and open to the public. 12 to 3 at the Westin La Paloma, so it's going to be a great venue. Ryan Hansen will be interviewing me, kind of turning the tables at 1 o'clock during one of these sessions there at the Westin La Paloma. We'll be talking travel. Hope you'll be able to come out and enjoy a fun afternoon talking about one of my favorite subjects, travel. Be right back on Buckmaster. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. We're just about 11 minutes toward 1 o'clock, and I do want to mention one of our fine sponsors if you're thinking of a road trip, and it's always nice to get away. How about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? It's something different. 3-hour drive, not too bad, over to a really beautiful part of the southwestern United States, and there's so much to do over there. Silver City is a very historic part of the southwestern United States, and the full listing of the many things to do, including doing some hiking in the Gila National Forest and Wilderness with all the great scenic drives this time of year. A lot of the winter birds, yes, they migrate from Canada and all sorts of places in North America. They're not stupid. They know where to go to enjoy some really nice weather. So check that out, too, if you like to bird. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the full listing of the places to stay, and there's some great places and the many things to do on their fine website. All right. There are three Democrats who are vying right now to replace Karen Ulick on the Tucson City Council. Councilwoman Ulick in Ward 3 has decided she wants to do other things, so she'll be retiring at the end of the year. Felicia Chu, a teacher at Mansfield, was on the show last week, one of the Democrats, and today we're going to talk with another one of the candidates, Tom Tronsdale.
Tronsdale.
Mm-hmm. Tom, good to see you, and thank you for coming in. Tom is the owner of Canyon Fence Company, and he announced recently that he is going to throw his hat in the ring. How's that for a cliche? Tom, how are you doing? Why did you want to get involved with this?
Well, thanks for asking, Bill. I've been a resident of Ward 3 for almost 3 decades. I went to high school there, college there, and now I live there. My family and I love where we live, and we really feel now is the time that we can change things for the better, keep what momentum we have going, and making a difference. And that is with families and communities, neighborhoods, and the businesses. We need to respect the families, empower the neighborhoods, and support the businesses of our ward.
Tell me a little bit about your background. You're certainly not a newcomer to Tucson. You've been around a while.
Yes, I have. I've done a few things. I was a graduate of Sal Point in the U of A. I did leave Tucson to go to the University of Kansas for law school. And at law school and following, I was able to work with organizations like the ACLU and the National Council on Disabilities for school rights for disabled students. And following that, I worked at a variety of places acquiring tools, where I ended up back in Tucson back in 2001. And in 2001, I worked in risk management until I joined Canyon Fence 9 years ago.
And how did that transition, getting into a construction-related trade, how did all that work for you?
It was an adjustment, as any changes are, mm-hmm. but I worked in risk management primarily in construction.
Okay.
So it wasn't a total shift in my mind.
Let's talk about some of the major issues that you see facing the city. City voters will be asked in May during a special election to improve and enhance our police and fire and the upgrading a lot of the equipment they need. And then 40% of the half-cent sales tax would go toward roads. Are you on board with that?
Yes, I am, Bill. And that goes back to the very core of what I've been talking about, the families and the neighborhoods. First, with the sales tax, that will really help people in their relationships with the police. I think it's important that the neighborhoods feel comfortable with the police so they are able to report crimes and trust them. And at the same time, with the new equipment and increased resources, the police will feel more secure and protected when they're going out into the neighborhoods. And I think that increased communication, along with the continued leadership of the police chief, with the guidance with the council, will make a big difference. And that additional revenue will definitely help.
How do you view the road situation? We did pass, the voters here in the city voted a few years ago. In fact, actually, that five-year program to improve our roads is coming due very soon. How time flies, right?
It just seems like it started.
I know, but they have made some progress.
The roads are better. Are they great? No. But I think that's why this half-cent sales tax is very important to continue the improvements we have been making. I mean, it just shows that we're not where we want to be yet.
How about economic development? Where are you on that?
In terms of...
Perhaps incentives, whatever.
I think incentives are a viable tool to bring people to our region. I mean, there's intense competition throughout the country, especially in the Southwest, for all businesses. People want companies to come to their cities. And I think it's important for the city to use tax incentives or other economic development tools as part of the piece to bring companies here. Do we need to give away the farm, so to speak, when somebody comes? No, it should be a case-by-case basis. Not everybody needs the incentive to come. However, you know, jobs and building our community is important. We need to use all our resources to do that.
There's also talk of a half-cent sales tax being put before voters in November for early child education.
Correct. And I think every parent, every family, grandparents, everyone understands that affordable child care, especially for preschool, is one of the major issues. I don't know how people do it. I don't know how people can afford child care and work. It's amazing. And in terms of this resolution, I don't know about it. I haven't seen enough details for it. I haven't seen enough specifics as to how it will definitely help. So I'm not going to say I'm for or against it, but I need to see more on it.
What are your other issues in this campaign?
I think empowerment is the biggest thing right now. And I had been talking about this prior to the November election. Let's just take Ward 3 for an example. There's 33 neighborhood associations. Of those 33, 7 are completely inactive right now. 4 are dormant. And there are 3 other areas in our ward that don't even have neighborhood associations to call inactive. That just tells me that if the people in the neighborhoods aren't talking to each other and talking to the ward offices, then things won't get done. We don't know how to address people's issues if we're not talking to them and they're not talking to each other.
What's happened to those associations? Why have they fallen off the radar screen?
I think part of it is most times people don't think they're being heard, or sometimes people need the tools to feel they're being heard. And an active ward office will reach out to those groups to get them active. Instead of just saying they're inactive, we need to approach them and engage them. And it goes for the neighborhood associations. It goes for some amazing community groups, you know, things like the Prince Road Salvation Army that does so much for kids. We need to incorporate all of these people back into the ward.
Are you concerned that Mexican tourists may be deciding not to come up here when they're hearing about a border tariff being instituted on them? Does that concern you?
Immensely. Right where I work, my office is at the corner of Park and 36th. Across the street from us is the Bridges, which is now one of the largest Costcos, busiest Costcos in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And where does that business come from? It comes from Mexico, as well as the local neighborhoods. It scares me that we could see a drop in any of that income. And as a business owner who has many employees that do have origins in Mexico, or it's a family in Mexico, to see their relationships with their family affected also concerns me.
Yeah, because we're talking, I believe the figure is as much as $1 billion that Mexican shoppers put into the Tucson economy. That's huge.
It's amazing. I mean, we need them. We've always needed them. If you, like you said, if you went to Costco on the weekends, You can look at the license plates. They're from Mexico. You go to Tucson Mall on the weekends. There's a huge contribution from the northern Mexican economy to our community.
How are you structuring your campaign? Just going to go a lot of door-to-door, meeting with people?
In a ward-only race, mm-hmm. it really is all about talking to people. And I really need to learn more about what everybody wants and what mm-hmm. everybody feels is missing. I think part of where we've gotten today is because it's very top-down. It seems like we're being told what's important to us and why it's important and how we should feel about it. By engaging neighborhood associations and community groups, we're trying to reverse that flow. Let's talk about what is important to us and let me hear from you and then work our way up.
Tom Tronsdahl, where can people find out more about you and the campaign?
Right now, you can go to my Facebook page, which is Tom Tronsdahl for Ward 3 City Council. There's quite a bit of information there, and our website should be up by the end of the week.
Okay, Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. And we'll be talking with all of the candidates for the Ward 3. There are three Democrats and one Libertarian. All right, coming up this afternoon, Mic Check with Mike Shaw, and today's Mike's birthday. Happy birthday, Mike, if you're listening. Ray Allen will be ably assisting Mike on the birthday show this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson, 3 hours of local talk, talking cultures from 9 to 10. Then me, Bill Buckmaster, with you. And then put it all together, really half of our broadcast day, Ray Allen, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. is local talk. So we're real proud of that here at KVOI. On behalf of Mr. Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon and evening.